I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
I'm Angelique Preston.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We're going to have some real healing. We've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity, and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And good morning. Welcome to What's Next. Today on What's Next, we're going to list a simple topic that is not very simple at all. Refugee resettlement and the complications that go within that. We have with us Biju Bahati. She is the manager of the TSTR program at Jewish Family Services. Good morning to you, Biju.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Danielle Burness is with us as well, director of Refugee and the Refugee and Immigrant Center for Healing at Jewish Family Service. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
A lot to talk about here because, as I said, you know, you can use a term like refugee resettlement, and that has its own implications and its own thought, but the complications that go within that and what refugees go through. And that's what brings us to our discussion here today with Biju and Danielle. Biju, we'll just start off with you're the manager of the TSTR, Trauma Systems Therapy for Refugees. Why don't you give us a little bit of background onto that?
Certainly. TSTR, as we know it, it's a very new program within Jewish Family Services. It is a program dedicated to addressing refugee youth mental health concerns and bringing the community together in raising awareness about the impact of trauma on children, as well as the acculturation process for young people. And so it's a unique model of service that sees the importance of bringing the clinical perspective and the cultural perspective into the service we provide. It's usually a relationship between a cultural broker who is a member of a particular community, who speak the language of the community, to work in partnership with clinicians to provide services. Our services ranges from community engagement, where we're building trust and raising awareness about mental health, and skills-based groups for youth in schools, and individual support. We also extend our support to the families because we can talk about mental health. We cannot provide social-emotional solutions without addressing core stressors, which are basic needs for people, and in conjunction with mental health services.
And I think it speaks to itself, but we before we were on the air, we talked about how quickly this program seems to expanding. So there's a connection. We're seeing a connection between a need and trying to make things available, correct?
Absolutely. I think COVID brought so many needs to service.
Mm.
And other issues going around in the country and in the world, but also in Buffalo area in general. You know, often we talk about trauma in the context of what has happened in the past,
yes.
You know, including the pre-migration for some people and the dangerous travel journeys to the U.S. and some people living in a refugee camp. And for young people in particular, is education being interrupted or a lack of formal education in general. All of those factors, they contribute to complications around mental health and distress in general for young people. But we also have to address the ongoing trauma of resettlement and navigating new systems of care. And also, what does it look like making a friend in school if you don't speak the language and you don't know the rules of engagement of the new society? So this program is tailored to providing services to young people as they go through all these adjustments.
There's so much there. and to talk about, and a lot of, I'm sure, a lot of different types of stories that I'd really like to get into. I'm curious about the cultural broker to go with inside of community, because as we do talk about to a certain extent, but we do see, you know, the refugees that have come to Western New York and Buffalo. While many, let's say, might be from Africa, of course, there are many different cultures and so different nationalities that come as well. So that really puts a real stress on connecting, right? Mm-hmm. So a cultural broker, how does that look like? What is that?
Yeah, I mean, the cultural brokering model is not a new concept.
Okay.
And it's infused in the TSTR model to best address the cultural and really the nuance around forced migration journeys for people overall. You know, like I said earlier, we can't do mental health as we know it in the Western world, knowing that intercultural contact is happening day in and day out. And so how do we integrate community knowledge within mental health interventions that were created in the Western world context? And so what TSTR does is, let's engage with the refugee and immigrant community. What are their concerns, and how can we use what they know in addressing distress into how we provide mental health with the context of current stressors? It could be navigating schools, right? It could be navigating social programs, if you would. And so it's a partnership model it's important to work together to best support the community. I mean, just imagine going to a doctor, you don't speak the language, and it's just you and that doctor in the room. And if you're lucky to have an interpreter, that's great. But imagine being greeted by somebody who speaks your language right at the front door, right? And also somebody who understands your culture in the room with you, with the doctor. That's the difference when we talk about cultural brokering.
Yeah, and I think a really important piece of that, and kind of what Bijou was alluding to, is that our cultural brokers really facilitate that trust between client and provider, and they play a role in making sure that the care that a youth and adults, you know, a family member is receiving, making sure that that is culturally responsive, culturally appropriate, that that care is actually going to meet the need of the individual that is attending that service.
Right. And what that looks like in the context of servicing youth, imagine we get a referral from a school that this young person is in distress. They need mental health counseling, right? And so my team, knowing the language, let's say they speak Swahili, for example, and the cultural broker on staff who speaks Swahili and of Congolese background, and most likely has also had the experience of migration or forced migration for that matter. And so they can speak to the nuances that the person we are serving come with. And they participate in the enrollment process, in service delivery, and at the end of the service. And so we are fully embedded from the beginning until the end, whether it's filling paperwork, whether it's completing intake, whether it's completing assessment and evaluation. They are consistently a part of the service. They are the ones to reach out to the family with or without the partner. And so it's just this beautiful way of saying one person cannot address the multifaceted challenges that refugee and immigrant populations face.
When it comes to culturally relevant, it's a fascinating concept, because when you start thinking about it, you know, every culture has their norms, how they go about doing things. And now here somebody is, they're living in Buffalo, they're having issues. So can you maybe explore that a little bit, what that might look like, where, okay, you know, we're trying to assist here, we know the language maybe, but we're touching upon a topic that, you know, just either is totally unknown or is, you know, a cultural taboo of sorts. Can we get into that a little bit, what those might look like?
Definitely. So I supervise the cultural brokers, so I train them in how we deliver.
So you know this
care.
Pretty well.
And so we are all everyone on my team and beyond my team are trained in delivering services through the trauma systems therapy model. And it's all in the names. It's really partnering with systems to better support children and families. It's because you can't just work with the individual knowing that they are influenced by their family. They are influenced by, you know, close community, including schools in this case, and society at large. And so how do we partner with other systems of care to bridge the cultural gap, but also address the unique barriers that refugee and immigrant community face, including language, including just navigating new systems that are completely different from where they come from, including mental health culture in the United States, right? That's also a culture that we have to navigate.
Right.
And when we talk about what does this look like, it's explaining to people, first, this is what you referred here for. Do you even understand what that means? Mm. Right? And if not, we can explain further, connect them to the person who made the referral, but also, what are your needs and how can we best support you? The beauty of this program being embedded in a refugee resettlement program and also a multi-service agency is that we have the luxury of connecting our clients to other services that they may need. And that's where the wraparound support comes in. If it's school-based, my team is there. If it's community engagement, my team and other people are there. If it's, you know, individual counseling, if it's youth, my team takes on. If it's an adult, we can support. So we are triaging needs as they come to us and providing support and meeting people in their moment of distress, if that makes any sense.
And really, the foundation of our programs, not just in TSTR, but across our Refugee and Immigrant Center for Healing, is what we talked about earlier, that community outreach and that community education, and really speaking with the communities before building services, so that when we're building the services, they're actually reflective of the expressed needs of the communities instead of trying to make a community fit into a service that wasn't built for them and may not be appropriate for them. So we do get a lot of feedback, a lot of education from the communities on what our services should look like, and what does healing look like?
Sure.
What exactly is going to be the best path for moving forward to start these services and get people engaged in care?
So it sounds like there's modification. You're always being flexible.
Yeah, we tailor our services as needed. And the beauty of having diverse team on staff is that constant learning, but in the moment you need it. It's not that you have a training around refugee and immigrant and their needs, but we have the people who have lived experience on staff. Mm-hmm. Our clinicians can say, what does this look like for Afghan community? I need to go meet with this family. How can we best prepare so we show up prepared to have this conversation? And so the team is constantly preparing for meetings and service delivery together. And so there's ongoing learning all the time.
And so there must be a lot of pre-thought then to which member of your team is going to go to address.
Yes. So when we get a referral, the first question is, what language is it?
Sure.
And in knowing that, I am able to see who on staff can be paired with who to deliver care for that particular case.
How many languages available among your staff?
One person on staff may speak 5-6 languages. That's a different and unique circumstance.
Okay. Yeah,
but on staff right now, I have a cultural broker of Afghan background, and she speaks Dari and Pashto and probably Farsi, many others probably. Mm. We have a cultural broker from the Congolese community who speaks Kiswahili, French, Kirundi, Kinyarwanda, and probably two other ones. We have a case manager on staff who also have Congolese background, speaks Swahili, French, probably Lingala and Kibembe. We have a Spanish speaker on staff to support our Spanish community. And myself, I may not be the direct service staff, but as a supervisor of the program, I am originally from the Congo DRC. I speak Swahili, little bit of French. I can get by in Kibembe. And I came to this country when I was 15. And I started high school not speaking the language, navigating high school. And we all know the complexity of being a teen, right? And yes. So I have that lived experience, and so many other people on the team as well. So we can also relate to the experiences our clients are coming to us with.
We also have somebody who is able to provide language support for Arabic speakers.
Okay.
So that might be expanded to a lot of different communities, as a lot of different communities speak Arabic. It may not be one particular community, mm-hmm. Like is the case with our Afghan cultural broker. Yes.
Right.
So we do have a lot of language support, not only in our TSTR program, but across our division. Like Bijou said, some of our staff may speak 5-6 plus languages, and our model as a division, we have our cultural brokers who are built into our TSTR program, but our diverse staff are always willing to jump into other programs and help out when they have a language available that is needed. So we do a lot of cross-programmatic work as well, especially in terms of language support.
Is it fair to say that just about each one of those languages have been engaged by people that you've served?
Definitely. I mean, you know, things that are happening in the world impact who comes to our door. Mm. And so when we talking about servicing the Afghan community, we wouldn't be servicing Afghan communities specifically in schools addressing trauma if we didn't have the Afghan war,
right?
You know, and so, you know, that dictate the trend, if you would. But yes, we've engaged all of the populations, and we could engage so many more because there's such a diverse the diversity in Buffalo is incredible, and having all those languages on staff is almost impossible, but we do the best we can with what we have.
But you actually highlighted right there, the idea that there is this diverse community that is here. You know, I think people who watched the West Side grow in the last 15 to 20 years will say what a blessing it has been for Buffalo, for sure. Mm-hmm. But to that, you know, how do we, you know, take steps to further engage and make sure that, you know, our community members, you know, can be a full part of everything that's happening here, for sure. I mean, that's probably what you are dealing with day in and day out, right?
Yes, and also appreciating that diversity, because it's like we have the world right in our neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. And taking the time to get to know our neighbors, learn who they are, where they're from. And that exchange of knowledge is just, people pay a lot of money to go to different exchange programs. I mean, you can go, but it's right here.
Right.
So how do we take advantage of that? We also, especially in our skills-based, we constantly have conversations around conflict resolution, building capacity for addressing emotions and what that looks like cross-culturally, and what does communication and respect looks like for different cultures, and so that we can bring awareness about the importance of intercultural contact, because that's the world we live in. And so just appreciating our diverse populations is important.
Conflict resolution. That's something that is a kind of a core element of this, yeah? How does that play out? How can you take us through that?
The skills-based groups is about 8 to 10 weeks. We have a curriculum for it through the trauma systems therapy model, where we have session by session, each has a topic. We start off with, you know, just building common ground rules for how we operate, team building. Then they get into values. What are your personal values? What are some values that are tied to your culture specifically? And what are some values that you have acquired for being in the United States that cross-cultural contact and what it does to changing somebody's values? Then they get into, communication, both verbal and nonverbal. What does that look like in the U.S.? What does that look like back in the Congo or Afghan? Recently, one of my staff was debriefing with me how their group went around nonverbal communication.
I really want to hear this.
And the student were talking about how in Afghan, for example, it's rude to look somebody in the eyes. Mm. But then in the U.S. with our clinician who's U.S. born, but in the U.S., it is not rude. It demonstrates confidence, and it's different for different genders. It's certainly even more rude if a female is looking at you in the eyes back home versus in the U.S., it's like, you go, girl, right?
Yes,
so it's all these dynamics that kids are navigating in schools, and through group conversations, they get to talk about all those differences. Some other topics that they talk about include my identity. How is your identity changing as you come from one culture to another? Who are you in the context of being in the U.S., and what does that look like? They also talk about conflict resolution and resolving conflict. What would you do if somebody just come to you and, start conflict with you? What kids talk about how back home, there's no police as much as we have police here. And so here we are afraid to engage in conflict because we know, school will call police, for example. Then we get into deep around talking about emotions, especially emotions of distress. Do you talk about what you feel like back home? Are your parents talking to you about what you're feeling and that kind of stuff, and talking about different coping skills with them and doing a lot of activities through that, and just different coping mechanisms with them?
When you're talking about I'm trying to picture myself as a 15-year-old trying to resolve what my parents want and what's going on around me, and then you add all the other elements to it as well. What can you share to a certain extent what those conversations are like when they're these sessions are going on and what these young people are expressing?
It's a beautiful space. It's a safe space where kids come together with a common language, common culture, and common experience of navigating school, friendship, and also navigating caregiver relationship. One of the biggest tension that we have learned over the years doing this program is that parents are feeling a sense of grief that their children have immersed so much in the American culture that they've lost their culture. But the reality is that they have not lost their culture. They've just been integrated so much that you feel like you don't have that connection. And oftentimes kids speak the language faster than the parents, and so they are out and about more, integrated into the American society, and parents feeling like my child is too American, right?
We all have that problem.
Exactly. And so, we hear these conversations in the group, and kids may say, my parents don't understand what I'm going through. And I think that can be minimizing to what kids are going through. And so we have those conversations trying to help them understand that your problems are not any less problems just because you came to U.S. as a young person. But your parents are also struggling to find their footing within a new society. But how do we build this sense of understanding where your parents are coming from and where you are so you can be in harmonious relationship, if you would? And so just helping kids work through that in the context of group is very it's my favorite part of the program.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, in recent times, it seems to me, mental health has become a bigger issue. It's become something that I think more and more people are embracing and opening up themselves to. Mm. We have, in the case that we're talking about here, refugees, people coming from other cultures. Are we finding that other, I think it's obvious that other cultures have other ways of dealing with mental health scenarios, but I guess I'm just kind of curious of how, if we can understand maybe how maybe it would have been addressed in Afghanistan or in Congo or wherever, or maybe just not addressed at all. I mean, I guess that's one of my questions. Is it just something that's just not addressed mm-hmm. in these cultures, or is it just differently addressed?
So I can speak to that a little bit in the sense of one of our other programs, which is our psychosocial support program. And it's a very different model of care, mainly for adults, but we do work with youth as well. And it's kind of a complement to TSTR. And so what we found out is that for the Afghan community, for example, you know, there's a lot of stigma around mental health. It's not something that was talked about. A lot of education was needed before we could really get into the provision of mental health services. And then we also started working with the Ukrainian community because of the conflict in Ukraine. And we realized that they're coming from a very different perspective. They're used to more traditional mental health services. And so in service provision, our services look a little bit closer to traditional mental health care, which is not always appropriate
right.
for other communities. So I think that is one of the great things about TSTR, about psychosocial support services or other programming, is that it's very flexible and adaptive to meet the needs of the communities. And we can switch it up depending on, you know, what their experience of mental health is. And really reflect that.
And Bijou, I saw you both nodding your head and writing notes as Danielle was speaking. So you have something to add to that?
Specific to TSTR, when we say mental health, in most languages and based on my experience with the team, it's not even, there's not equivalence of mm-hmm. that in many of the languages we okay. speak to. So first and foremost, we have to tailor the language of mental health to the communities we serve. And so when we really say mental health, what do we mean? When we say mental health, what level of care are we talking about? Because for so many people who have been displaced, possibly lost people, dealing with complicated grief, disconnection to their homeland, not speaking the language to navigate services they knew how to navigate, it is mental health, but it's a different level of mental health, right? So how do we assess that in a way that makes sense so we can tailor the services to that need, right? And so in TSTR, when we get referral, we look at what do you need, right? And knowing what people need, we support them in building their capacity in understanding that you have just gone through a horrific experience that in of itself will impact your day-to-day functioning. So let's talk about function in the context of mental okay. health. Let's talk about school success in the context of mental health. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about building friendship in the context of mental health. So that helps to talk about mental health in a language that is simple, in a language that people will understand and connect to their struggles.
So it's not an immediate call to a local therapist. It's a lot more to it than that, for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's where building trust with the community is vital, because addressing mental health for some is calling a imam or calling a priest, calling an elder in the community. It means let's get together and have food, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And so how can we tailor our services in those contexts, if that helps?
Totally helps, and we're looking forward to continuing this conversation. We're going to take a break. With us, we have Biju Bahati and also Danielle Burness. Biju is the manager of TSTR at Jewish Family Services. Danielle, the director of the Refugee and Immigrant Center for Healing at Jewish Family Services. This is What's Next, and we'll be right back on WBFO.
Hi, I'm Christina. I love exploring the world around me, and I have behind-the-scenes VIP tickets to some of the most exciting places and people in Western New York, and you can come along with me from wherever you are. Let's go! A new series you can watch on WNED PBS, the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel, and on PBS Learning Media nationwide.
So let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go!
Join WBFO every Saturday at 6 p.m. for an insightful and enlightening series of audio documentaries from our region that tackle topics such as the environment, health, the world of entertainment, and more. Listen to the WBFO DocuHour every Saturday at 6 p.m. right here on WBFO, your NPR station.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. With us, Biju Bahati and Danielle Burness. Danielle is the director of the Refugee and Immigrant Center for Healing at Jewish Family Services. Biju, the manager of TSTR at Jewish Family Services. We're going to reset about TSTR here in just a little bit, Biju. But Danielle, just maybe more a little bit about the Refugee and Immigrant Center for Healing.
Yeah. So I started at Jewish Family Services October 2019. And I was the manager of our care specialization program that works primarily with individuals and families seeking asylum. And the importance of this program is because of their lack of legal status, they don't have access to any other services. And so we provide full wraparound services to this community to make sure that those basic needs are met. And that really ties into what Biju was saying, is like, what do you need? It is all tied in to emotional well-being. It's all tied into mental health. If somebody doesn't feel safe in their environment, that's going to impact their mental health. And so out of that, we really started to expand our idea of what services could look like in terms of mental health for the refugee and immigrant community. And at that time, Biju's program, TSTR, was piloting. We also started to pilot another program, our psychosocial support services. And that support services program was really in response to the most recent conflict in Burma, and we wish that we had a program that could immediately respond to the community, not only individuals that were coming over from Burma, but people that were already living in the community that were impacted by this conflict. And it just so happened that we ended up piloting our support services with the Afghan evacuation. So that was the first community that we worked with. And then, unfortunately, the war in Ukraine happened, and so we started working with the Ukrainian community, and then we have since expanded to the general refugee and immigrant community. So those two programs are really a complement to Biju's program in that we work with adults mainly. We can provide family support. We have a lot of conversations. I think I mentioned this earlier, that the foundation of all of our programs is that community outreach and education piece. And so I think it all ties in very nicely. But really, our philosophy of RICH is providing a very different model of mental health care for a community who just doesn't fit in to our traditional mental health services at no fault of their own. It's just a system that wasn't built for them. And really, it doesn't allow for the barriers that refugees and immigrants experience to be addressed. So things like transportation, things like learning the community, things like learning the language. And so, for example, what we can provide to ensure that our clients are able to actually access mental health services, we can provide bus passes for people that are attending appointments in person. We can pay for phones and phone cards for people that are doing virtual or phone appointments. So we really, every day, we're considering how can we make this better, and how can we really make this a model of care that can be replicated, that better serves the refugee and immigrant community.
And just in your answer there, you mentioned Burma, you mentioned mm-hmm. Afghanistan, you mentioned Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a simple question, but probably a simple answer. There's going to be no shortage of demand for your services.
Oh, absolutely not. Unfortunately, we do have a wait list for a lot of our programs, and that's because the need is so high, but we can only expand so quickly. That's something that we're at a point of right now, is really looking at how can we expand our programs to meet the needs. And something Bijou can talk more about is the response of the community in hearing about our services and seeing the impact of our services. So, for example, we have a lot of schools coming to us for TSTR to be embedded in their school system. We have Department of Social Services coming to us for support. So we're really trying to meet the needs, but we also want to make sure that the services that we're providing are quality care. So it's really just trying to find this balance, unfortunately. You know, there are always going to be people in need. It can be really tough.
Yeah, and it's also finding a balance of providing care, not because of a mental health diagnosis, but providing care because there are needs, right? That need to be addressed. And if there are diagnosis, then let's complement the services, addressing basic needs, simultaneously addressing complex mental health needs, if that helps.
What about outreach, reaching out into these communities? That can always, obviously it's gotta be challenging.
Yeah. It is challenging. But outreach looks different if it's somebody who you know, somebody you know you can talk to directly, and somebody who's asking you, how are you, in the language you know?
Mm.
How are you over a cup of chai? How are you in your home? How are you in your church? How are you in your school? That's different than in an office where you're like, where am I? What is this? Am I crazy? So the environment makes a difference as well. And who service you makes a difference. But also the training of who services you also makes a difference. All of our team are trained in trauma systems therapy, which embeds outreach and engagement as part of your work. My team does tabling to a multitude of events throughout the city.
Is that right? Okay.
Absolutely. We go to school events. We coordinate with schools around parent engagement activities. Just yesterday or the day before, my team was partnering with school team to figure a way to help our Muslim students who are gearing up for Ramadan.
Mm.
How can we best support students during this holy month? You know, many of them will not be eating. Many of them will not be showing up in cafeteria. They need to be accommodated to pray during the school hours. What do you do?
What did you learn?
What we worked with the school to plan, you know, pick a time that makes sense to allow students, figure out supervision for student spaces, which bathroom to be designated for washing. If the kids will not be in cafeteria, what space can we put them in during that time so they're not forced to go sit in the cafeteria while everybody's eating. So that's where the outreach and engagement works come in. It's not a one-time, let's do an event and that's mm-hmm. it. It's like, how can we build our presence in the community? Because learning happens when you are in community with people. And if it's over a cup of coffee, I'll be there. If it's over, you know, tabling at Farmers Market, mm-hmm. which we are partnering with Providence Farm Collective in Orchard Park, and we are at their tabling event. We are there for their celebrations. We are in community with people in spaces that are trusted. And so we are constantly learning with them, and we are constantly letting them know we are also available for services that you may not have in these spaces. And so let's partner. I think I've told my team that my ideal world is parents coming to us and say, can you help me with my child? Because okay. they understand the importance of our services. And so we are here to learn with and from the community. And
how many? Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry, Darren.
Yeah. Just to jump in, I think one of the barriers that a lot of people experience in attempting to do that community outreach and education is that it's very difficult to connect with community leaders if you don't know them. It's difficult to connect with churches or mosques or, you know, whatever piece of the community you're trying to engage with, whereas the benefit of our staff being so diverse is they already have these connections. So they bring them with them to our agency and to the work that we do, and it just helps facilitate those conversations much easier and mm-hmm. much quicker.
Yeah, and they also come with diverse training background. On staff, we have people with political science background and interpretation background or translation background. Some are teachers or agricultural farmers. We have a musician and a teacher and of faith background. I have a pastor on my team. like just the diversity of these experiences, and some are parents, some are brothers and sisters, and some have understood the importance of these services because it's not being talked about in their communities. And so if we can join forces in supporting our young people and as a result, you know, get the word out to the community, that's very, it's powerful in changing the trajectory of young people. We've had pastors reach out that, do you have a faith-based counselor on your team? I'm like, that's my next request. But you see that this is what mental health looks like for us. Faith is important, mm-hmm. right? And so how do we integrate all this knowledge into the work we do? So, yeah.
You mentioned your ideal world would be where the parents start asking you for help with their teenager. Has that happened? Has it happened with any?
We've had a few reach out. I'm like, yes, they got the message. or they are struggling so much that they have not found support that is relevant. Mm. And so, and maybe I've had conversations with them like, when you hear mental health, maybe it looks like your child is not succeeding in school. They are struggling, right? First, they don't speak the language. Second, they didn't come with the, you know, enough education to prepare them for this particular education system. So just helping parents understand mental health in a different light. So they're not just going to like, oh, my child is not crazy. I'm like, that is not what I'm talking
right.
about. So just helping them understand that what it looks like for young people in different spaces. And as a result, you can see some adults in the community starting to reach out.
And as you were mentioning the concept of education and learning and if a child is struggling, one thing that I learned in the time I saw you, as a matter of fact, or I was introduced to you to a certain extent, was at the rollout of the agenda for the Partnership for the Public Good. And one of the things that was brought up is that, let's say a student, a refugee comes here, and he might be 14 years old. He's expected to be at a certain level and is being tested at that level and almost ensures the fact that there is going to be that kind of struggle for a student.
Big time. And it's a setup for failure, to be honest, because we shouldn't be expecting them to perform at that level, knowing that they don't have the background, knowing that they are new to the country, knowing that they don't speak the language, knowing that they are teenagers struggling to rebuild friendship. Those are the things that kids care about before you even talk about grade. And so when you bring Regent into the pictures, it's terrifying. I've been in that situation. Just circling things you don't know, filling in the bubbles. You don't know what's happening. It brings me to tears when I talk about that.
I'm sorry for touched upon that in that regard. What about the experiences that refugee children, more specifically, bring when they come to the United States? You know, the trauma that they have seen. I mean, I can only imagine what some of those are. But let's maybe just talk about how it impacts young people.
They come with a diverse background. Some have been highly educated. Others have lived in the refugee camp probably most of their lives. Others are just fleeing war in the context of Afghan war and Ukrainian and all that stuff. And so it really varies from student to student based on how long they've been in the country, what support systems they have to begin with. Some kids come by themselves. That's a very unique position.
They come by themselves? Teenagers?
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And for others, they come with family members, parents, and so on and so forth. And so they bring a variety of experiences. And some kids come with no education whatsoever. Straight to high school. That is trauma in the making, right? And others have experiences, traumas of losing family members, right? You name it, they've experienced. And others, direct war and conflict and all of that. So being mindful of where they're coming from, the struggles they've experienced, but also what will they be faced with at home while they're here, at school, on the streets with friends and so on and so forth. It's very dynamic, very.
Danielle, I'm curious about, for you, your experience working in this field, especially with refugees. Maybe just talk from you from a personal standpoint, how it has been for you. I mean, you're a licensed social worker. You have a background in that as well. But this work, of course, has a whole different element to it. How has it been for you?
Yeah, so for me, I have been more engaged in the asylum seeking population than the refugee population, which they share similar experiences. There is some overlap, but there's also a lot of difference in experience. Biju bringing up the point of a youth perhaps living in a refugee camp for 20 years. Some youth that are in the process of seeking asylum have been in five different countries. They've been exposed to five different educational systems. And I think there is, when it comes to our educational system in the United States, it's really built on a deficit model. And what I mean by that is that they're viewed as lacking the skills necessary to be able to be successful in the school system, as opposed to a strengths-based approach and really looking at their resiliency and the strengths that they do bring with them and how that can be integrated into their education. A lot of youth come from various educational systems that are all different. One thing that I see, and actually I am currently enrolled at UB for my Doctor of Social Work, and something that I'm exploring is this issue with the educational system and how can we increase the amount of culturally responsive care that youth are receiving in the education system. And a lot of that comes with training And immersion into the refugee community and really understanding where people are coming from. I think there's this assumption that any education that youth have gotten prior to coming to the United States, it mimics what they're going to get in the United States. So that's also tying into the Regents issues, that there's an assumption that they're going to be able to sit down and take this test just fine, which is not always the case. And so, yeah, it's very frustrating to see, but I think things are changing, which is really exciting to see. I think that our TSTR program is a very powerful program, and we see that change occurring in the school systems. Like I said, we have more schools reaching out to us because they recognize the impact of the work that's being done, but they also recognize that maybe their services aren't set up to best meet the needs of the students that they're serving.
This is a kind of you brought us into an expanded conversation, but it's interesting to hear you talk about that. Is there a sense that as we bring more refugees, asylum seekers, more come to the United States and get into the educational system, that maybe there might be a different approach to education, that, like you said, just because you haven't learned mathematics through eighth grade in the United States, but you bring other understandings, other skills, other talents into it. Is there a conversation about that going on?
I think there is through TSTR. You know, it's something that the program talks about with the schools, and Bijou can talk more about that. But that's something that I'm exploring while I'm in school, and how can we kind of repair this issue? How can we ensure that educators, not just educators, but the educational system, any staff that are coming into contact with youth, are trained in how to work with refugees and immigrants, asylum seekers, whatever their status or lack of status may be. So that's something that I'm currently exploring.
That's very interesting, for sure. But unfortunately, we're running out of time, so I can only spend so much more time talking about this.
Yeah, that's a whole other.
I know, but
it's a whole other conversation.
It's a fascinating conversation. It's got a very philosophical bent to it, for sure. But an appreciation of what people bring from their individual experience. Mm-hmm. Your experience, Bijou, we're not going to have a lot of time to get into it, but I do have to touch upon it to a certain extent. You arrived in the United States at age 15 to Burlington, Vermont.
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
May 6th, 2004.
Mm-hmm.
May is a nice month because, it's starting to warm up.
Yes.
People are seeing the sun more. We were buying coats. It was
Where
that
are you from originally? We didn't even ask that.
Originally from DRC, Democratic Republic of the Congo, and my family flee Congo to Tanzania because of the war. And my family lived in the refugee camp for about 4 years prior to arriving to the United States. And yeah, I was 15 at the time, navigating multiple environment from, peers to just homework, all in English, which I didn't know at the time. And so it's been quite a journey, but it's been interesting because it has shaped what my career path kind of took. So I also I enrolled in high school. 4 years later, I finished, and then I studied social work at UVM. Yay, kudos.
the Catamounts, right?
Yes. And then I also did my master's in social work at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus. So just focusing on supporting children and their families, but also bringing to light the concerns of young people in schools. And it was interesting that this program was being piloted at JFS. And I'm like, this is happening here. it's exciting. So it just brought it to full circle for me to bring my personal experience to my social work background together to support the communities. So it's very exciting. And I'm just appreciative of the initiative. And for JFS to take the lead in bringing to light the importance of mental health, not just for young people, but overall for our forcibly displaced populations who do not have as many supports when we talk about, you know, social support and so on and so forth. So it's exciting.
Absolutely. And we're down to about a minute here. Just a thought about the work that you're doing and what, you know, why people should understand its importance. Who wants to start with that one?
Yeah, so I can start with that. And I briefly touched upon this earlier, is that what we are doing is very different, and it's in response to understanding the needs of the community. We're very fortunate that as an agency, we've worked with the refugee and immigrant community for a long time, so we do have a very good understanding. And I hope that we can continue to build this model of care that can be replicated by other agencies so that it's not just us providing these services. Really, the refugee and immigrant community shouldn't be limited to only one agency to access services. They should be able to go anywhere and access culturally responsive services and services that are reflective of the needs that they're expressing.
I'm going to have to say goodbye on this. I'm sorry about that. Biju Bahati and Danielle Furness, thanks for joining us on WBFO's What's Next. This is WBFO and WBFO HD1 Buffalo, WOLN Olean, and WUBJ Jamestown, your NPR station.